Welcome back to the Feminist Book Club podcast, a show for dangerous, well-read women. Each week, we explore literature and media through a feminist lens as one small way to reclaim our time, our books, and our stories. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Renee Powers here, and I am thrilled to share today's episode. It is so good. You won't want to miss our featured author today. She's Alexis Henderson, the author of The Year of the Witching, which is an absolutely brilliant book. I don't think it's gotten enough buzz, even though I've seen it everywhere. It's still not enough. And it is perfect for heading into spooky season. I ask Alexis in this interview a bunch of interesting questions and some terrible questions. We talk about the resurgence of witches in literature, why people seem to be so interested in horror and thriller books right now. And I ask her seriously what must be the weirdest, most specific question I have asked any author to date. And yes, I'm gonna let that sentence hang there. That sentence is the podcast equivalent of clickbait. You're welcome. You will have to stay tuned to hear what that weird question is. But first, some exciting news. Feminist Book Club is hiring. I am so excited and scared and excited and scared and excited. We're looking for an executive assistant to split their time between Feminist Book Club and We Sparkle, which is another Twin Cities startup. We have a lot of overlapping responsibilities, and we think that this could be a really interesting partnership for someone who's looking to get involved in the Twin Cities startup community. The ideal candidate would be an exceptional communicator, a creative problem solver, extremely detail-oriented, and truly someone who thrives in a changing startup environment with a social justice mission. For more information, there's a link in our show notes or head to feministbookclub.com/workwithus, and there are dashes between each word. We're also bringing on more blog contributors. If you love writing, feminism, books, and social justice, you wouldn't be listening to this if you didn't love those things. So this is an opportunity for you. You'll find a link to all that information in our show notes as well. So come join the Feminist Book Club family. Preference will be given to local Twin Cities applicants, but this is a mostly remote position, especially in COVID times. All right, next, I am going to remind you of this over and over and over again, but save the date for the Feminist Book Club Readathon on October 9th, 10th, and 11th. Basically, this is a chance for all of us to set aside some time to catch up on our reading goals, especially before the holidays, and doing so while chatting and connecting with readers all around the world. We will be using hashtag FBC Readathon on all social media, and we will be having mini challenges and contests all weekend long. I've been stockpiling some great prizes for months, like literally since like February. So there will be tons of opportunities to win some great stuff. So that will be October 9th, 10th, and 11th. And you don't have to read all weekend long for 72 hours straight. You can pop in whenever it is convenient for you. We're also opening pre-orders for our October boxes in the next few days. And the best way to find out about when those are open is to get on our email list. If you are not on our email list, why? You get a head start on signing up. And since we have sold out our last few months, it's really the best way to make sure you're able to join us. The link to sign up for our email list is in the show notes as well. In case that wasn't obvious, our show notes are a literal cornucopia of information and resources. So do be sure to check them out from time to time. But today you will find in our show notes links to work with us, to join the Feminist Book Club team, to join the email list, to get a heads up on October boxes, which, by the way, the theme for October is thriller. And so I think our guest today, Alexis, will convince you that it's a perfect time to read horror and thriller. So that's all the announcements I have for today. And here is today's interview with Alexis. Hi,
Hi, everyone. Oh, I'm so excited to be talking with Alexis Henderson today. Alexis is a speculative fiction writer with a penchant for dark fantasy, witchcraft, and cosmic horror. She grew up in one of America's most haunted cities, Savannah, Georgia, which instilled her lifelong love of ghost stories. Currently, Alexis resides in the sun-soaked marshland of Charleston, South Carolina, and today we are talking about her debut novel, The Year of the Witching. Welcome, Alexis.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Oh, this book is so, so good. But first, we always start with the same question. What does it mean to you to be feminist?
To me, feminism comes down to intersectionality and sort of representing everyone, the most marginalized among us. And so that is super important to me. And I feel like that is kind of like the core of my thoughts and feelings and what I care most about as relates to feminism.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've always said when we help those, I don't want to say at the bottom, but we do live in a hierarchical society, right? But if we help those that have the least amount of power, the rest of us also benefit from that. And I think that is the key of intersectionality.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm not going to go there yet because we have to establish the playing field here. For those of you who haven't read The Year of the Witching, just go out and buy it right now. But can you give our audience an overview of this book?
Yeah. So The Year of the Witching is dark fantasy slash horror, and it follows Emmanuel, who lives in this very cult-like commune that is ruled by a prophet and his church. But Emmanuel feels this pull toward the dark wood, which surrounds her home. And there she encounters the spirits of four dead witches. And through them, she discovers a lot of dark secrets about the church and prophet.
It's been billed as The Handmaid's Tale meets the Salem witch trials. I think there's an element of Jonestown to it. And I'm obsessed with cults. So everything about this was just like right up my alley. So what does your definition of feminism, how is that applied in your book?
Well, I think, you know, the most obvious way is that Emmanuel, she's not white, she's biracial, and she sort of passes as black. And so I had read a lot of witch stories that do have feminist themes, but very few of them that kind of featured characters that look like me. And so I wanted to take those same themes and examine them through the eyes of someone who, you know, oftentimes isn't centered in those types of stories, someone marginalized, and sort of experience that those same themes and structures that way. And I do think that, you know, it really is interesting how much those stories can change, how familiar tropes can change when they're sort of placed in the hands of characters that normally aren't centered in those narratives.
Ooh, say more about that.
You know, when I first started writing the book, I kind of thought it was almost like childlike. I was like, I like these stories and I would like to read a story that I like with someone who looks like me. And it was kind of just that. But then I realized through the process of kind of growing with Emmanuel through the story that was not the same story that I thought that I was telling, because it was placed in the hands of this black girl. And I didn't realize how much her identity would completely upend and change all the tropes that I was very familiar with, you know, the witches versus the church, you know, good versus evil. And those things were so familiar to me, but they became somehow more distant and more complicated through Emmanuel's eyes. And that was an interesting experience for me, certainly. It was unexpected. And it did kind of feel like, in a way, like a loss of power, because I think I felt more confident going in. And then halfway through the book, I realized, oh no, this is different. This isn't the story that I thought that I was telling. But it was a fun and challenging process for sure.
Oh gosh, publishing industry, listen to this, right? That we are getting so many rich, interesting, nuanced, vivid stories when we just change the perspective from white folks to, you know, black, indigenous, people of color. If we get those stories, we get such good literature. We need to be throwing money at you guys.
Thank you. I agree with that. I 100% agree on that. Yeah, but for sure, I think that people underestimate how different just the stories that they're familiar with are when they're placed in like the perspectives of characters that they don't normally read through or experience narratives through. It's revolutionary. even really, really simple stories like, you know, Cinderella fairy tales can be completely revitalized when they're placed in the hands of someone who maybe hasn't had the opportunity to kind of live those stories or experience them on the page. So yeah, I'm all for that.
Yeah. And it's got to be said that Emmanuelle isn't just a Black girl in this puritanical culture. She's the only Black girl. There are other people of color kind of, they're literally called the outskirts, right? But she's with a white family. Her friends are all white. The prophet is white. The church is white. The outskirts, people in the outskirts have their own churches and chapels and belief systems. And so she is such a pariah just by the way that she looks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it provides such an interesting lens on whiteness, on race, on power, gender. Ugh, it is, there are so many themes that you tackle and is done so deftly. I want you to write everything. So we have to talk about it's horror, it's witches, it's speculative fiction. And we're seeing quite a bit of this genre come up in the last year, probably. What do you think it is about this moment that we're seeing this resurgence of horror and witches in fiction in particular?
You know, I have a few theories, but I think the one that I think makes the most sense is that we're kind of living a nightmare. We've been living a nightmare for quite a few years now. And I think that people sort of are able to take comfort in dark stories because they reflect our world, unfortunately. I've also, you know, personally, I tend to turn to dark fiction because I'm a deeply anxious person. So So it's like you can kind of like experience fear, but in an environment that you know is safe and contained. And so I think that that can kind of offer people some form of relief or comfort in itself. And the two are sort of tied together in a way, I think. Maybe anxieties about the world are driving people to horror fiction because they can feel all of the fear that they would have been feeling anyway, but know that, you know, things are okay within like the media that they're consuming. They know that those things at least can't become real. So maybe that kind of is a respite for people.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right. Like horror fiction and thrillers, they provide a container for all of the anxiety, and it's almost a release for that as well, because you know you're safe. That's, yes. But the witches part especially, I think there's something very specific about witch narratives right now. Do you see this kind of witchiness shifting from, because you said you know, you grew up in Savannah, you grew up in a kind of superstitious haunted city, right? Do you see changes over the last few decades of how we've talked about witches especially?
Oh yes, definitely. I think before they were almost always just the villains. It was very black and white, like that's the bad dark stuff. And now I think that witches sort of represent this, they're like a symbol of female liberation, I think, and females can really, you know, create, like seizing their own power and using it to kind of free themselves and free other women. So I think that that's incredibly empowering. And I think that witches kind of embody this righteous rage, and not everything that they do is fully ethical, but they're angry and for good reason. And so this idea that they can kind of take that anger and turn it into power, I don't think that it's any coincidence that that has become something that people look to and actively kind of want to pursue and engage with. It certainly fascinated me. I started writing The Year of the Witch and kind of, I think, right around the dawn of the Me Too movement. And I know that I wasn't the only person who was sort of drawn to witch stories during that time. There have been so many. And I think that we were all sort of collectively inspired by this idea of like women claiming not just power, but anger, and maybe the kind of darker elements that come with that.
Yeah, I feel right after, or right before, right at the same time as the Me Too movement really blew up, we saw a lot of nonfiction about women's anger, and now we're seeing it bubble up in fiction. And I think that's, you use the phrase righteous rage. I had written revenge, but I think that, like, my notes for this interview, I usually have very, like, well thought out notes. My first question is how? ! The next is revenge. These are not questions. But yes, I think a better phrase is righteous rage. And you're right that witches are a vessel to really lean into that and experience that. My question, how, question mark, exclamation point, it's referencing this. I was so immersed in this world, and this world is so rich and vivid and dark and magical and all of these things and nuanced. And I just don't understand how writers can come up with that. Can you take me, can we crawl up into your brain for a moment and take me on a journey of how you even began to craft this world and this system of magic and everything within it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a ride. So the first semblance of a story that I got was an image of a young Black girl crouching in the middle of the woods at the feet of this monster to the body of a woman and the head of a deer skull. And I chased that image for as long as I can. I kind of built the whole world around that image. So it was almost like detective work at first. I looked at like, what was this girl wearing and what was her expression and what was the vibe and what was surrounding her. And so the world kind of expanded outward from that image. And I think I just kind of really pursued my curiosity. And so as I kind of began to explore the structures of the world, and kind of ask myself, what story was I trying to tell? Why did I want to tell it? I did a lot of like research into the things that interested me the most. So the occult and witchcraft. And I sort of just pursued my own curiosity as far as it would take me. And the world developed from there. And now I just kind of walk around with Bethel in the back of my mind. Like I can kind of put myself into the story. And like, I know my way around, and it's weird to walk around kind of carrying that. Sometimes it feels like a superpower, to other times it just kind of feels like a hindrance. Like it's a lot to have that kind of like alive inside my head, but it definitely is.
Yeah. This is a very specific question, but I think that it can be applied more broadly. A lot of the scenes take place in the house of Emmanuel's family. Mm. This is weirdly specific. How do you know the like layout of the house? Do you have that house like based on a dwelling that you know, because there's a front door? Like that's one of those things. I'm not a writer, and so these very specific moments where, you know, the character goes upstairs, how do you know what's upstairs?
It's strange. I think I'm like so firmly rooted in Emmanuel's head that like if Emmanuel knows, then I know. And so, yeah, I have, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I have a floor plan in my head of the house. And so like, I know where like the staircase is, like the backside of the staircase in relation to like their dining room and like how it all fits together. And it's strange to have this knowledge, because I never sat down with a pen and paper and sketched out like, this is Emmanuel's house, but like it's a three-dimensional space that I can move through. Even right now I'm doing it like walking through the house in my head, and it's weird that it works that way. But I think that it all comes down to the character, and when a character is like, you really bond to that character, you begin to see the world through their eyes in a way that is so strange and real. And that's how I kind of explore the world. So I thank Emmanuel for that. I'm like, thank you for being so perceptive and like understanding things and explaining things to me and kind of like holding my hand through this process.
Thank you for answering that very weird, specific question.
No, I've never been asked that before. And it's a great question.
It was just one thing that I was thinking about as I was reading it. I was like, how do we know what this house looks like? This is so good. So it is 2020. It is the hellfire of 2020. You are a debut novelist. There's a lot going on in this world. What has this experience been like for you?
It has been a whirlwind, but the publishing part has been a good whirlwind. People have been very good to me, and they've been so excited, and I felt just surrounded by like light and joy, and I really have felt supported every step of the way, and I feel really lucky to say that. I thought that publishing during a pandemic would be not the most fun experience, but pandemic aside, just the publishing piece and kind of presenting my book to readers has been so fulfilling. I'm kind of floored by the kindness of people and like the generosity and the excitement, and it has been the highlight of my year for sure. Publishing amidst the pandemic is really challenging, because I feel like there's just so many things that are competing for my attention that are more important than my book or, you know, it being on shelves or any of it. And so that piece has been difficult. Recently a close family friend came down with COVID, and just like trying to kind of like focus on them and like supporting my friends and family and being present in that, while also juggling the book stuff. It creates this almost weird dissonance where I'm like happy for the book stuff, but all of these other things happening, it's kind of hard to occupy both spaces at once, a space of joy and like mourning at the same time.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear that about your family friend. I hope that they have a swift recovery.
Yeah, they're doing better, for sure. But yeah, it's just, I think we're all kind of dealing with that. Everyone knows someone and is worried for someone. And so, yeah, it's really difficult. But I think the best thing we can all do is just, you know, to be present in all of it. And when early on, I kind of almost felt like a guilt for being happy about book things in the midst of all of this, because so many people are going through so many difficult things. But I think that there's space and room for all of it, for like grief and joy at once, even in the same moment. And so, yeah, just kind of giving ourselves grace and taking it moment by moment, I think is important.
Yeah. And I'm not here to be a therapist, but gosh, you're giving people you're providing such a service to folks that are dealing with all of the things,
the pandemic,
the social unrest. You know, I'm in Minneapolis. It's been a very difficult year for Minneapolis as well. And being able to lose yourself in a book is such a comfort. And so I think that authors right now are just some of the most important people we have.
Thank you. I agree. As a reader, I feel like I just feel so much relief when I can lose myself to a book. And I'm grateful to the authors that like allow that to happen. Yeah. Thank God for books.
Thank God for books. Amen. Oh, and we're talking about social justice issues, and your book is so rooted in so many of them. What do you think the role of fiction, especially, we're getting a lot of book lists about anti-racist books and literally books named How to Be an Anti-Racist, which, you know, Ibram Kendi is brilliant. But what is the role of fiction in this moment right now to you?
You know, I think with fiction, there's something so special about kind of allowing yourself to embody the actual body or the space of someone who is unlike you. And I think it's such an exercise in empathy, or at least it can be, if you open yourself to that experience. And so I think because of that, fiction is really, really important when it comes to kind of letting our walls down, opening ourselves to experiences that aren't our own, and sort of allowing ourselves to sort of live through experiences that we haven't lived through directly and embody those spaces. I think it's vital to kind of take that in. And I think that fiction really does allow us to do that. So I hope that people, you know, in the wake of all of this, are open to, you know, reading books by people who don't necessarily look like them. I think that it's just such a simple way to kind of open your mind to new experiences. And I think that, you know, I was concerned, you know, in the midst of the protests, that there would be just kind of like this like trend where people are like, okay, I'm going to read books by Black authors. And then once, you know, the tides turn and, you know, their focus is on, you know, new pressing issues, that like people kind of neglect that. So my hope is that people continue to engage with the work of people who are unlike them. I think there's like really no better thing that you can do if you're looking to kind of open your mind and learn.
Our audience, this is a message to you. Continue to support authors of color. It is so important. It has been so important, and Feminist Book Club will continue to do our part by amplifying voices that don't look like me. This book has been, every blurb I've seen has used the word feminism, has used feminist to describe it. Was that your intention going into it, that you were going to write an overtly feminist book, or did the feminism just emerge because it's part of your life?
I think it just emerged. I didn't realize how sick Emmanuel's world was when I was writing the first draft. And I kind of discovered the darkness of her world through her eyes as she was discovering it. She's, you know, very indoctrinated at the beginning of the book. And it's a process of a dark process of discovery for her. And I followed her on that journey. And even I was kind of, by the end of the story, was kind of surprised by the depravity of this world. I didn't know at first that it was going to be as you know, as feminist as it was. But I did know that, you know, just centering her in this narrative was kind of innately feminist in itself. But seeing that those themes sort of manifest themselves as I wrote the book and even as I revised it and worked the story and got to know it better, it was a pleasant surprise, but it was also in a way kind of like a rude awakening, because it forced me to kind of see plainly the darkness of my own world, because it was so heavily reflected in this book. And I don't think I realized how much some of these things weighed on me until I saw I had put them on the page.
Yeah, you're writing your way through your own environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we are coming low on time, but I want to end at the beginning, because I deliberately didn't read a lot of blurbs about this before I started it, because it needed just a fresh slate to impress itself upon my brain. And so I started this book. I remember exactly where I was in my house, what I was wearing, what I was drinking. It was one of those kinds of moments. And the first sentence, do you mind if I read the first sentence?
Oh yeah, please do.
Okay. She was born breech in the deep of night. So few words sets the story up. And I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Oh, thank you.
So do you know, like, when did you write that sentence? When did you know how this was going to begin?
Weirdly, I remember exactly where I was, and I think even what I was wearing when I wrote it. So the first sentence barely changed. I think maybe that there like was one word, like the, that was the only thing that changed. But I wrote it in the writing center at my college. I was a writing tutor, and I didn't have any students to tutor at the time. And so I pulled up my laptop and I wrote that in Scrivener. And yeah, the whole story sort of just unfolded. I had the image of Emmanuel in the woods before that, but that was what kind of jump-started me with like the voice of the story and being able to kind of narrate it. So
was that the first sentence you wrote of the book too?
It actually might have been.
That's brilliant. That's amazing.
I think it might have been, yeah.
And were you like, oh, this is good when you wrote it?
I hope so. I really hope it's good. Kind of interesting, so I'll see where it takes me. Yeah.
What's been the most exciting thing so far about all of the buzz it's been getting, all the publicity you've been doing, everything?
I'm honored by, I think, the blurbs, just because people I look up to so much saying nice things about me. It's just, I feel like, yes, I did well. But also, I think just the reception from readers. I don't think that the creative process is really complete until I give the book to the people it was intended for and kind of present it to them and hope that they like it. So having that piece of the puzzle like in place and seeing people respond to the story and engage with it and discuss it, you know, the good, bad, the ugly, all of it is just so fulfilling, because I feel like finally the process of this book is finished, and I didn't expect to feel so fulfilled by that, but I love that. It's so exciting. It's an absolute honor that people are even just reading it and picking it up. And yeah.
I was really impressed with the blurbs too. When I picked it up, I was like, all right, Danielle Clayton. All right. You know, Rena Baron and Amanda Lovelace. Like these are not small potatoes. Congratulations.
Yeah, I look up to all of them so much. So it just kind of blows my mind that they even like know my book exists. Yeah.
That's amazing. All right. Well, we end with a couple of softball questions. So is there anything that we didn't get to that you would like to share or talk about before we wrap up?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. You've been so wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and sharing this book and this story and Emmanuel, this character. She's so great. And readers are, if you haven't read it yet, like I said, you're going to love spending time with her in this world. So our last couple of questions, if you have a book to recommend that is not your own, what would you recommend to our audience?
First Sister by Lyndon A. Lewis. It's a space opera and I'm reading it right now. It's very, very good. It just came out and I recommend everyone go buy it. I think it also comes The Handmaid's Tale, but it's very, very different from my book, but it has all of the things I love and it's very, very feminist and I have heard nothing but good things and the writing is amazing. I can't recommend that one enough.
That is a brand new title to me, which is hard to come by. I have to go check this out.
Yeah, and the cover of both US and UK edition, stunning. It's like, it's really, and it's beautifully written. So I highly recommend it.
Can I ask you really quick about the cover art of The Year of the Witching? This is stunning. Do you know this model or?
You know, she tagged me or commented on Instagram and I was like, oh my gosh, I got it. She's great. And she's very close to Emmanuel's age, I think. And I think, you know, she looks exactly how I pictured Emmanuel in my head. It's very eerie. So yeah, it was exciting that was able to happen. And that I love my cover that much because, you know, I feel so lucky, but yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I don't usually like pictures of people on a book because I want to be able to conjure my own understanding. It's like why I don't like to read or watch movies before I read the book. But this was, like you said, she's perfect. This image of her is perfect. It is exactly how one would picture her without seeing her first. Okay, we got off track. I'm taking too much of your time now.
Oh, I'm having so much fun.
All right, the final question is, if our audience would like to connect with you, what's online, what's the best place to do that?
You can follow me on Instagram. It's Lexis H, LEXISH. And then on Twitter, I am Alex H Writes.
I will put links to that in the show notes. I will put links to The First Sister that you recommended, as well as The Year of the Witching. Thank you so, so much for joining me today. And I hope we see this on all the bestsellers list.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I had such a fun time. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As always, a rating and review in the podcast app of your choice goes a long way in supporting feminist media. We'd love to have you join the Feminist Book Club subscription box, a community-driven subscription box which features a book of the month and products from women and queer-owned businesses delivered directly to your doorstep. This is an easy way to vote with your dollars, as you'll be supporting this podcast, small women and queer-owned businesses, and the charity beneficiary of the month, which receives 5% of total sales. Use code PODCAST for a discount on any subscription package. Learn more about the box and get the show notes for today's episode at feministbookclub.com. See you next time.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature. Oh, 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 oh. A well-read woman is a dangerous creature. Oh,
oh, oh. Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.